The Wisconsin legislature is deciding whether to make it more difficult to force school districts to drop American Indian nicknames and logos. While the debate continues in Wisconsin, we wanted to learn more about the history of sports mascots, so we got in touch with Jennifer Giuliano at the University of Maryland. She's just finishing a book on the subject.
Originally, they referred to any object or sort of talisman that brought luck to a person or a household. Religious talismans that wives or mothers would give to men to protect them during war, or young boys who followed troop divisions around. Where it gets attached to sports is in the late 19th century, so around 1880, 1890, where teams began to have young boys take on responsibilities, most popularly in baseball, for example, caring for bats, getting the team refreshments. It really was about boys wanting to be attached to the game and to watch men play.
So it was a blend of those two things, the good luck and the boys helping out?
It was. Oftentimes mascots would be these young boys doing bat boy responsibilities, but they also sort of had a racial overtone. So you saw a lot of African Americans who were in their teens and early 20s who were hired by professional sporting teams to come perform in a vaudevillian sense. You know, they would do dances during intermission, have a comedic representation. And that's actually, as historians, when we like to point at where sports mascots in a racialized sense come from, that's really what we point to, is instances in 1908 with the Chicago Cubs where they hire Clarence Duvall, who's a vaudeville performer, and that sort of takes off at clubs around the United States where they're hiring vaudeville performers to sort of show up at the game and entertain the fans during intermission or in between innings of the game.
When or how did Native American references become swept up in all of this?
Native Americans have a long history with sport. There are a number of Native American athletes who were playing both semi-professional and professional sport in the 1890s and 1900s. People like Louis Sock Alexis, who the Cleveland Indians like to talk about, or Charles Bender, John Myers, Jim Thorpe. And a lot of times what you saw was when Native athletes were performing as athletes, the newspapers around them and the teams that were employing them created these mascot identities around Indianness. So these guys got referred to as chief and warrior and redskin and other monikers to sort of identify them on the field. And in the 19-teens and 1920s, when the color line gets instituted in baseball in particular, these professional athletes are no longer allowed to be on the field, but those identities that were sort of created before that were seen as being very attractive and that they could attract an audience and attract people to come to the game.
How did mascots make their way from professional sports into, I know you study collegiate athletics.
Right. So what you start to see is as they're sort of creating these commercial identities to watch the game in professional sport, colleges actually start doing the same thing. So in 1900, 1910, 1920, they start building these massive sports stadiums that you can see when you go to universities and colleges. And when they build those massive stadiums, they have to fill them. And so when they go to fill them, they create these brands and identities around Indianness that are attractive to their audiences. You know, it's come watch our game, come be part of this entertainment, come be part of this spectacle.
When did people begin to question whether that was appropriate?
Well, that's what's interesting, is that a lot of the times when we talk about mascotry, there's a focus on the period after 1960, that, you know, in the 60s, as diversity and as America as a country began to shift and incorporate minority voices, that's when, you know, you sort of saw mascotry being critiqued. But in fact, when you look at the record, critique about whether these were the right identities to have is as old as, you know, the origins of mascots themselves. You know, there were professors and students and others questioning whether or not it was right to use these racial monikers and these racial performances to advertise their institution.
Why do you think the debate continues now, 100 years later?
You know, I think a lot of what goes into this is about power and privilege and money. You know, there are people with very strong feelings about this. Native, white, African-American, you know, pick your ethnicity here, you know, who feel like they have a community and an investment in their sporting teams and in their universities and in their, you know, professional organizations. And, you know, they want those organizations to represent them.